Good day, and welcome to the Karbon Homes Annual Investor Update Call. My name is Joey, and I will be your EverCall coordinator. The format of the call includes prepared remarks from the company, followed by a question-and-answer session, at which point participants will have an opportunity to ask questions live. Participants are also welcome to submit questions in writing via the Ask a Question button found on the upper right of the Deal Roadshow. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Paul Fitterman of Karbon Homes. Paul, you may now begin.
Thank you, Joey, and good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to this presentation, which is an opportunity for us just to update you on how Karbon is doing and hopefully hear some questions from you at the end there. So we're hoping to canter through the presentation in a little over half an hour, and then that should leave plenty of time for questions at the end. So look forward to hearing from you. If we can skip on a slide. Some fine mugshots for you. So I'm Paul Fitterman, I'm the Group Chief Executive, and I'm joined today on the presenting team by Scott Martin, who's our Executive Director of Resources, and by Andrew Thompson, who is our Assistant Director of Treasury. And there's some background information on each of us on there for those who would like to peruse that. But Andrew, if you could skip us on a slide, please. And just to remind everyone that there will be information contained in here which is subject to that disclaimer. Please do take a moment to familiarise yourselves with the limitations on some of the information that that will be disclosed during the course of this presentation. And Andrew, if we can then move on to the next slide, which just gives the sense of the structure of the presentation. So I'm going to do a brief overview and update, and then talk a little bit about some of our operational performance metrics. Then Scott is going to pick up and talk about development and assets and a little bit about our financial performance. And then Andrew will pick up at the end and talk about our funding and treasury situation at the moment. So hopefully that makes sense, and we will dive straight into it and talk a little bit first. Let's just skip on to the next slide, please, Andrew. About our geography, many of you on the call will be familiar with this, but for the one or two people who perhaps aren't, Karbon is an association that operates across the north of England with about 32,000 homes. We also provide services to a further 9,000 homes belonging to other housing associations, and that takes our footprint across the Pennines into Cumbria and the purple blob into Lancashire that you can see there. So that's a sense of where we operate, and there's a little bit of information there about the fact that we consider ourselves to be more than just a landlord, and we take the value-added activities that we undertake as a group very seriously, and are keen to support people on their journeys, and hope that we can play a part in them building their own successful futures. Just to move on a slide and think about some of the credit highlights as we perceive them. We know that credit rating is important to everyone out there, and we remain at an A and positive. We had our outlook upgraded by Standard & Poor's in May of last year, reflecting our performance in the challenging years that preceded that and giving them a little bit of confidence in Karbon's ability to deal with some of those headwinds that we've been experiencing. And just for confirmation, we had our regulatory rating review, which reported back in November of last year, and that confirmed that we have retained our G1, B1 rating from the regulator, so that's very pleasing to be able to note as well. Some of the other things that we think are important about Karbon that perhaps you may know or may be interested in, firstly, that we've grown significantly through merger since our formation. We've increased our size from about 24,000 homes to about the 32,000 that you see today. So we've got a successful track record of integrating organisations into the group and making sure that that helps to support our financial and operating performance. We are a Homes England strategic partner. We now have something in the order of £165 million of grants to spend over the lifetime of the current programme, which takes us through to 2026, to support the delivery of 2,200 new social and affordable homes. That's not the entire story on our development programme, and we'll be talking a bit more about that later. We believe we have strong ESG credentials. We've been one of the pilot organisations which has now been reporting against those metrics for some 3 years now, and we believe we have a strong story to tell in that space. We maintain what we consider to be a relatively low-risk business model, insofar as we are not dependent on selling properties for our financial performance, which means that we have limited exposure to market sales risks as an organisation, and no plans to change that profile in the foreseeable future. And you'll see later in the presentation that we retain some fairly robust performance metrics, and particularly the financial headlines, which are there at the bottom of that slide. And perhaps most pleasingly, given that we're about to enter a world of consumer regulation far more proactively through our regulatory body, we have been benchmarking our performance on the tenant satisfaction measures, the TSMs, you can see referred to there, and the benchmarking information we have suggests to us that we are performing well on customer satisfaction and compare very favourably to many of our peer organisations. So that's very pleasing as well. If we skip on a slide, Andrew, please. Colleagues may recall that in December last year, we had a slight change in our subsidiary. We had in our group York Housing Association. They received a transfer of engagement in from Leeds and Yorkshire Housing Association, and that combined to create our new subsidiary, 54 North Homes. So that is a 3,000 home subsidiary which is focused on our Yorkshire geography and has come together very well and enjoyed some early successes. So the development programme, which was from Leeds and Yorkshire's perspective, one of the reasons for wanting to join the Cardiff Group, the development programme has continued to thrive, and they also have the benefit of being able to manage the homes that Carbon itself delivers in Yorkshire. So that has a positive impact on their business plan, the revenue they receive from managing those homes on our behalf. So there is a significant forward development programme, partly delivered in its own name by 54 North, partly delivered through Carbon's activities in Yorkshire. An area of growth for us, and it remains a particularly favourable housing market for us. So we've had a very favourable experience with developing in that geography. It's had an award from the Social Housing Decarbonisation Fund to upgrade 100 homes in Leeds, so something around £1.7 million on that project. And one of the key benefits from 54 North Homes' perspective of joining the Carbon Group was access to some of the broader services that the group provides, particularly around money matters, home comforts, services, and other ways of providing support to customers to help them thrive and deal with the impact of the cost of living crisis. Some early wins for that organisation coming out of the extension of those services across Yorkshire. That's gone really well, and that integration process has gone very smoothly, and culturally that is beginning to look and feel a lot like it's an established part of the Carbon Group, so we're really pleased with how that has settled down. And if Andrew moves us on a slide, we can talk a little bit about the incorporation of South Tyneside Housing Ventures Trust, which concluded in July of 2023. This was an independent housing association formed by South Tyneside Council, and they completed a transfer of engagements into Carbon, so they no longer exist as a separate entity. They have been fully absorbed into Carbon's operation, which means that in South Tyneside Metropolitan Borough Council area, we have about 1,600 homes, which puts us as the leading housing association presence on that geography, second only to the council's own arm's length management organisation in terms of stockholding there. What that has meant is that we have very successfully acted as a partner for South Tyneside Council in its development aspirations, notably with regard to some extra care schemes that we are planning to deliver over the next few years. And we have planning permission already in place for the first of those, and then that's the computer image of what that ought to look like on that slide there. So that just gives you a flavour of the kind of opportunities that have come out of that. And that seems to have gone down very well with the local authority. And again, that has been a very seamless integration process. And we're looking forward to driving the customer satisfaction that those customers were experiencing under South Tyneside Housing Ventures up to the level that Carbon is more used to demonstrating. So lots of positive experiences for customers coming out as well. Moving us on a slide, we are pleased to be able to report that we published last year a report called Fair Foundations, which was an examination of the potential role of housing associations in general and other anchor institutions, and Carbon in particular, in how they can help shape communities. So based around the foundational economy thinking that underpins some of our regeneration activity, it was an attempt to articulate how A, that everyone deserves a fair chance to realise their potential, and B, to kind of pin down the role that Carbon is able to play in building sustainable places. And just to note there that we are piloting an approach in two areas, two very different areas, but both were worthy of attention in their particular ways. So Stanley is a former mining community in County Durham with just under 30,000 residents. Biker is an estate in our portfolio which used to belong to Newcastle City Council, where we have developed in consultation with the local community a Biker investment strategy which will deliver significant improvements to the look and feel of the estate over the next 7 or 8 years. So it's a long-term commitment from us to that community. So that was our Fair Foundations report. Moving on, Andrew, I think the next slide is ahead, so we'll skip to the next slide and just have a quick look at some of the current performance indicators. These are the key performance indicators that we track as an organisation in our monthly leadership meetings and at board level. So this gives us a snapshot across the piece of how we're doing. The bottom figures are the actual performance, I think that's the year to October. And you can see there that there's a bunch of green and some amber. There's one red around the development programme, but that is a phasing issue. So we believe that we will be on track in terms of the number of homes that we forecast or within reasonable striking distance by the end of the financial year. And 302 homes at this point in proceedings is not something that we are particularly alarmed about. You can see there that the energy performance, which is the decarbonisation indicator, is solid. Our customer experience, measured in terms of Net Promoter Score, is trending back towards the target level. So the amber figure there is the cumulative figure for the year. The figures for October, November and December have actually been ahead of that. So the trend is very positive in terms of customer satisfaction and customer experience. Homes occupied, we're slightly ahead of target on that. And we have some we have a solid performance around our safety measures. Inevitably, there are a few homes where we are seeking legal access to properties to complete some compliance work, but we know where they are and we are in control of that process, so we're not concerned about that apparent slippage on that indicator. You can see there a very positive score in terms of people's perception of us contributing to their neighbourhoods. And the colleague engagement score at +34 is the highest score that Carbon has achieved since it started measuring employee net promoter score in this way. So this is a very solid indicator. And on the basis of happy staff breed happy customers, we're very encouraged by the trend on that one. We're a little adrift in terms of our margin indicator there, just slightly below for reasons which Scott will illuminate further in the presentation. And again, a little bit adrift on the social housing cost per year. I've just been through slide 12 there. So if we can move on, Andrew, to the next one. And there are some quite detailed statistics on there about our operational performance. As I mentioned, a lot of that is holding up very well in some quite challenging circumstances. You can see that at the top of that list there, the income collection performance has been strong in the year, which means, looking at the one below it on current rent arrears, that's holding up very well compared to previous years. The void rent loss is better than we thought, but a little bit adrift of where our previous experience was last year. And you can see there that average relet times are holding up pretty well compared to target and to last year as well. You will be able to spot that there are some challenges around responsive repairs. So we haven't been achieving completions within target as we have in previous years. And further down the list, you can see that the average cost of responsive repairs has gone up significantly year on year as well. So there are some significant challenges, and these are well rehearsed in the sector. So they've been around labour availability and materials cost and materials availability. We believe that we are well down our recovery track now, and those performance indicators are improving month on month. So we believe that we have that situation back in hand and are trending in the right direction. So I think those are the highlights from that performance slide. So if we skip on to the next slide, Andrew, please, talk a little bit about health and safety and carbon. And again, for people who perhaps don't know us quite as well as others, just to reassure you that we do not have significant numbers of high-rise stock. We have something around 11 buildings that are over 18 metres high. None of them has been affected by the cladding issues that other organisations have experienced. So we feel we are in reasonable shape compared to many around health and safety. And we've just included a number of things there that we think you might be particularly interested in. On the top left there, you can see that the compliance-related expenditure is around about £12 million a year. That's up significantly from 5 years ago.
and likely to continue for the foreseeable future as health and safety remains a high priority for us as an organisation. Last year, we were able to report a robust response to damp and mould issues in the sector, and we believe that we are well on top of that issue now and able to provide a proactive service to deal with any issues that arise. We've got good stock condition information. We've recently completed, as it says there, our stock condition survey. We operate a rolling 5-year programme of surveys, but we've always got a reasonably up-to-date picture of the investment needs of our portfolio, which then feeds into our business planning. And we, in the summer, concluded at least trying to access 100% of all of our homes. And the conclusion from all of that is that across our portfolio, we remain at decent home standards throughout. So significant challenges in that area of the business, like everyone in the sector, but we feel we've got the information and the plans in place to make sure that we maintain the quality of our portfolio throughout. Moving on, Andrew. Just a little bit about customer service, worth just talking a little bit about this. It remains one of our three key strategic priorities, so delivering excellent customer service is right up there for us in terms of our focus and priority as an organisation. We work very hard to ensure that the customer voice is present and represented right across the range of our activities. So we have a very well-developed customer engagement model, and that includes customer representation in committees of the main board, so that board members can hear directly from engaged customers right through to a number of regional engagement opportunities and thematic groups that deal with a range of different areas of our business. So there are lots of opportunities for customers to input to what we do. There are lots of channels through which that input can be heard and acted upon by the board. So we think that we are in good shape for consumer regulation. We think that what we are doing will be absolutely on message for the requirements of that new consumer regulation regime. And as I mentioned earlier, we have been collecting the tenant satisfaction measure data throughout 2022-23. And for the current year, so we've got some robust information on how we're doing, and it is telling us that we perform well in comparison to other similar organisations, so we're very happy with that. And we thought we just might include a small case study about some of the work that we've been doing with the government's social housing decarbonisation fund, so you can see there a picture of a bungalow scheme that we completed in Euston in County Durham, which has gone very well. It was a significant investment, so it was a full external cladding exercise together with air source heat delivery and a range of other interventions as well. So it was a very significant programme of investment. And you can see there, Colin Barnes has very kindly given us a testimony. Colin, I believe, is the one on the left as we look, and he's been very pleased with the work that we've done for him. So, the customer asset side of our business seems to be remaining strong, and we're very pleased with the satisfaction levels that we're delivering. So at that point, I'm going to hand over to Scott. He's going to take us first through the development and asset side of the business. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Paul, and good afternoon, everybody. Andrew, if you wouldn't mind moving on to the development strategy slide, thank you. So as Paul mentioned, we have been a Homes England strategic partner since September 2021. And that partnership's progressing very well. Our original award of $131 million in grant funding for 2,200 homes was uplifted to $165 million in the summer last year. And we continue to uphold our promise to play our part in responding to the UK's housing crisis. To date, we've claimed $86 million of grants for sites already underway. And in terms of geographical split, we expect around 70% of that to be in the Northeast region, with the remaining build about 30% in the Yorkshire and Humber region. Our projections for new homes are shown in the table, are however under review as part of our FY25 business planning process. We are mindful of the continuing macroeconomic pressures, not least of which is inflation, but also continuing pressure on labour resource, raw materials and other areas that impact our business. And with that in mind, our board continues to make careful decisions around the balancing of resources, particularly around the provision of new homes, the planned repairs programme and energy performance improvement journey for existing homes. The board has reconfirmed their desire to continue to develop new homes as much as we can within our geographies and of the right tenure types which add capacity to the future business plan. But they also recognise the challenges faced across the sector in ensuring the existing homes and customers aren't disadvantaged by the pursuit of the new homes agenda. But I think the key message I'd like to pick out here is that we continue to have a low-risk development tenure mix, focusing on social and affordable housing, shown by the bar graph at the bottom right of the slide. Products affected by market risk, such as outright sales, they represent a modest aspiration of between 4 and 12% of our overall programme. And all our investment appraisals include an analysis of how we might pivot to alternative tenures if the economic environment changes. And finally, on this slide, we've got a high degree of flexibility within the programme, and we've got about 37% of the programme committed at this date versus around 63% uncommitted. So just reflecting on that, the flexibility of that programme to be able to move and respond to economic events. So Andrew, if you click onto the next slide, please, I'll just talk to you about some recent successes. Obviously, we're trying to build new homes that meet energy performance expectations of the next generation of customers whilst working in areas with the greatest demand for new affordable homes. And this slide shows some of the examples of our recent work. So, for example, in Trimden, we're working on 43 affordable homes that are adaptable and accessible to help people live independently for longer. In Thirsk, we've recently developed 43 new homes with a good mix of bungalows, flats and family housing to offer new supply in an area which has significant affordability issues. In Prudder, our recently completed scheme involved the demolition of some housing that was outdated and didn't meet the needs of residents and replaced them with 6 two-bed bungalows that included enhanced energy efficiency measures. Our new scheme in the centre of Newcastle will involve the building of 41 new 2, 3 and 4 bed homes, incorporating improved energy efficiency methods through the likes of solar panels and enhanced insulation, as well as bringing improved biodiversity measures into an urban environment. And finally, in Masham in Yorkshire, we're trialling sheep's wool insulation. So this is a test for the sheepish product that's backed by funding from North Yorkshire Council and the Northeastern Yorkshire Net Zero Hub. Sheep's wool, we think, is the perfect insulator for traditional stone buildings, not only providing a warm blanket for that building, but the wool structure helps to wick moisture away and is a natural fire retardant, so providing a good long-term solution to a traditionally challenging building material. So that's a few examples to show you the kind of things that we're involved in. But Andrew, if you can move to the next slide, please, and we'll talk about capital investment and energy efficiency. In this slide, we wanted to pull out some specifics regarding our investment that's planned within our homes over the coming years to help carbon play our part in addressing climate change, as well as ensuring the safety and efficiency of our homes for our customers. So we've recently completed an exercise to obtain internal inspection access to all our homes, and as a result, we've now performed an internal inspection on 80% of our homes within the last 5 years, which gives us a much improved data set on which to base our investment plans. Our new data is going to be used in our forthcoming FY25 budget and business plan, with a focus on ensuring compliance with the Decent Homes Standard across our stock, as well as the journey towards achieving EPCC in all our homes where possible. And as you can see, we're well placed on that journey with over 72% of our homes hitting that energy standard today. And our business plan does include expenditure to take our stock to EPCC by 2030. So Andrew, if we can move on to slide 21, 21st, which introduces the financial performance, and then 21, yep. So here we've presented our group FFR numbers from June 2023. And as I mentioned earlier, we are currently in the process of reviewing our business plans as part of our annual budgeting process. But as you can see from the top line of the table, social housing income from rented homes continues to be our main area of business, with core margin from social housing expected to be in the region of 36 to 40% in the coming years. The slight drop in proportions of social housing turnover from FY26 represents the small expansion in outright sales assumed in the later years of the plan. So as I mentioned before, we're developing our FY25 budget and business plan at the moment and working hard to ensure that we do maintain robust metrics that align to our strategies, but also respond to the current needs of our customers and communities. And to that end, it's worth pointing out that these forecasts may change, but there is that underpinning intention to retain our core strengths and flexibility to adapt to changing circumstances. So if I can highlight a couple of additional areas to you, EBITDA MRI margin. You'll notice that our forecasted margins begin to drop from FY23 onwards to levels between 22 and 25%. This is linked to the next phase of our stock investment program and capitalised major repair spend. As you can see from the penultimate line of the table, we're moving from a period of relatively low spend, for example, 14 million in FY21, 20 million in FY22, to a period where spend will be in the region of 30 to 46 million. And this increase in spend will help ensure our homes remain comfortable, safe and warm for our customers, improving outcomes for those customers and tenancy satisfaction through things like energy improvement initiatives and fixing those homes into a good standard. Similarly, on the EBITDA MRI interest cover, we are predicting that we maintain strong levels compared to many of our peers, but we still face the same headwinds as others in the sector around the increased cost of borrowing, rising subcontractor, labour and materials costs connected to major repairs works, all of which will start to weigh heavier on these metrics. It's hoped that making sure we have stable and predictable long-term repairs programs will help us achieve procurement savings in our longer-term contracts, but also stand us in good stead from a credit rating perspective. Furthermore, as Andrew is going to come on to later, we're looking to engage with our funders around what products exist to help future-proof our treasury structures in terms of the EPC, decarbonisation and planned investment works. And then finally on this slide, highlighting the debt to EBITDA MRI ratio. In June's FFR, we see this ratio ranging from between 12 to 14 times. We're mindful of maintaining some buffer in this metric should margins be put under pressure. And we consider 15 times as being a ceiling that stands us in good stead when formulating our plans. We think that this is a puts us in a good place when we're formulating our plans for FY25 and onwards, and again, to retain that flexibility to react to challenges or even opportunities that may come our way. So if we can go to the next slide, please. This slide shows you the numerical impact of the performance summary slide that you've just seen, but in statutory financial statements format. There's two aspects I'd like to highlight. In the FY22 actual results, we had 8.5 million of negative goodwill brought through the I&E when the Biker stock was acquired by the transfer of engagements. Ignoring that exceptional item would leave surpluses about 27 million, which would bring that year's result more in keeping with the rest of the figures. Similarly, in FY23, following the transfer of engagements of LYHA to our York subsidiary to create 54 North Homes, there was 53.5 million of negative goodwill arising on that acquisition. and removing this gives underlying surpluses of 30 million. Again, much more in line with history and with forecast. So if we can move on to slide 23, please. I'm going to talk about the unaudited year-to-date results for the 6 months to 30th of September. These results came out just before Christmas, but this the table shows here shows how the 6 months in September compares to the same period last year. Noticeably, our turnover's increased by almost 14 million, and we've shown what those are. It's 2.9 million new income from last year's new build homes that are now occupied. We've got 4.8 million in rent and service charge uplifts, where we increased these by 7% in line with government guidance, and 5.5 million of additional income contributions, bringing the former LYHA homes into the group. It's worth pointing out that in the first 6 months of this year, we've recognised another element of negative goodwill, being £4.7 million, arising on our third acquisition in 3 years, and that's bringing in 439 homes from the former South Tyneside Housing Ventures Trust, which was acquired in July 2023. What this means is that we're expecting to be slightly above our original budgeted surpluses of £34.6 million by the end of the financial year. But stripping out this negative goodwill shows that we have responded to events with an additional £2.5 million of spend on responsive and void repairs. We've had £500,000 of abortive development costs, and a further £500,000 resulted from accelerated software and IT improvements. So that's all for me on the results to date. I'm going to hand over to Andrew now, who's going to discuss some of the key points in the Treasury and funding arena. So, Andrew, over to you.
Thank you, Scott, and good afternoon, everyone. This is the funding and Treasury part of the presentation. What I will firstly take you on to is our sustainability summary. So, as Paul mentioned earlier, July this year was the third year in which we reported against our ESG sustainability reporting standard for social housing. Many of the metrics here you can see have been quoted elsewhere in the report. But I think this gives a nice snapshot of our ESG credentials. Ourselves in Treasury will continue to take the lead in this area, bringing together the various business functions and areas just to promote our story and the social value inherent in all we do, as well as making sure ESG is ever-present part of our decision-making. And then on the next slide, I will take you into a bit of a Treasury overview. Appreciate there might be some people on the call who are new to carbon and others who may know us already. So these slides are designed to give you a brief overview of our funding portfolio and Treasury strategy. We have now got a total of £681 million worth of facilities, as shown on the pie chart on the right-hand side. All of those are fully secured, available to draw against, with the vast majority of our current drawn debt, around 92%, being at fixed rates. It's worth remembering as well that our rating agency, S&P, have previously highlighted liquidity as one of our key strengths at Carbon, and it's my job to try and keep it that way. We see liquidity strength as something that we can influence positively. We already have some golden rules around liquidity in terms of the timing at which we begin to make arrangements for any new funding lines that our business plan suggests. So, for example, the board stipulate that any forecasted funding need must be arranged and available to draw at least 12 months before it's actually required. And we also have a further principle with our board that we maintain a minimum of 1.5 times sources versus uses ratio within our treasury policy for the forthcoming 12 months. We think this gives the organisation resilience in difficult times, but also, as Scott mentioned before, the opportunity to react to opportunities as well. As Scott also alluded to earlier, the financial information presented from June 2023's FFR, the landscape in our sector is continually evolving, so we're currently in the process of building up our budgets and financial plans commencing 24-25. I've highlighted on the slides here a few areas that have featured heavily in discussion so far with the board, such as inflation, revised stock condition information, our appetite for rent increases up to the maximum of 7.7%, which was just recently confirmed. rest assured, from a treasury perspective, we'll be focusing on helping the business reach well-informed and balanced decisions as we come to set that budget in March of this year. In terms of future funding requirements, we're not anticipating the need to draw on any new funding facilities until April 2026, given current information. So this has offered us the opportunity to look at current covenant suite and loan portfolio and to see if there are some opportunities to future-proof this or make some efficiency savings. We're currently working with several financial consultants, and we are going to be chatting to some of our lenders in the coming weeks and months about what we'd like this to look like for Carbon. However, those of you who already know Carbon appreciate we do have a track record in seeking partnerships and opportunities that will improve our position moving forward. So should anything of that nature require us to pivot quickly on treasury aspects, then we're always keen to hear about what options are available from the investor community to support this should we need to bring in any unexpected new funding. Moving on to the next slide, we'll give you a little bit of a view of our currently approved financial plan from, again, June's FFR. Slide 27 just provides a reminder of the healthy levels of headroom versus our banking covenants on interest cover and gearing. I'll move us quickly on to slide 28, which then pulls us into the areas of interest from, in terms of the rating agencies and other stakeholders. So we're looking at EBITDA MRI margin, debt to EBITDA, and the non-sales adjusted EBITDA MRI interest cover here. For a few years now, we've operated a shadow model, which links directly to our business planning software. This continues to be a vital tool in our strategic planning with our board, so they've got full visibility of how the strategic decisions they make have an impact on our future credit ratings and financial capacity. Our board have expressed a desire to maintain a strong A rating so that we can maintain a healthy balance between providing a safe place to invest but also making our resources work hard for the communities we serve. You'll appreciate that many across the sector are already seeing a squeeze on their metrics now and perhaps over the next few years too, but we'll be developing financial plans that are sustainable long-term and that keep a close watch on key levels of at least 20% MRI margin, less than 15 times debt to EBITDA levels, and non-sales adjusted MRI interest cover that are above 175% ideal. So that's where we're going from a treasury's perspective. Now I'd like to hand back to Paul just to close the presentation.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and hopefully colleagues will have taken from that information a sense of Carbon continuing to thrive and deliver against its objectives in some quite challenging circumstances. And we've left you there with an infographic just setting out some key numbers from our performance over the previous period. So I'm not going to dwell on those. Most of them you've had some exposure to in the course of the presentation. So perhaps the most useful thing I could do now is hand back to Joey and invite him to open up the questions part of the presentation.
Thank you, Paul. At this time, we'll conduct the question and answer session. If at any point you'd like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of the Roadshow and type in your question. If you'd like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. And if you've joined via web, please press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We'll pause here briefly to allow any questions to generate.
I can see, Joey, that there's one come in from Karen, which is asking us to elaborate on the increase in cost per home and the primary drivers of that. As I mentioned in the course of the presentation, that still leaves us comparing very favourably to some of our peer organisations. But I wonder if I might invite Scott just to give a bit of insight into what's actually driving that.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Well, a couple of things. As you know, the social housing cost per unit does factor in the responsive repairs as well, and see the capitalised major repairs are increasing substantially year on year. So we're seeing some of that come through. But we also have seen inflation fighting hard. So we have not been immune to that. There has been a lot of inflation, not only in terms of subcontractor salary costs, but also materials costs. So we're still bearing the brunt of that. We've also had a slight increase in repairs demand this year. So we've been trying to satisfy that demand by increasing our capacity in that area through recruiting new staff, but also taking on more subcontractors to fulfill that demand. So part of that increase in the current year in expenditure and responsive repairs is to try and satisfy that demand. And we saw a lot of that come through from after the Al Bishak case, probably November 22, when that was publicised, and there was a lot more requests from customers for inspections and consequently work to be carried out. So we're still seeing the impact of that filtering through the plan. So, yes, I think that was all, Paul.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I know Karen's talking about the average cost increase despite inflation coming down sharply, and hopefully that's given Karen a sense of the factors that are underpinning that, and inevitably there's a bit of a lag in the process as well for us, so there's still strong underlying inflation and some of or there has been in the period under review, less so now. So there's another question there, Joey, which is from Jake Linus from Colombia, who's asking about the development pipeline and asking what proportion are Homes England funding through the strategic partnership, and how much is coming in the question from carbon, which is typically through Section 106 and other similar structures. So the Homes England bit of the equation is 2,200 homes over the period up to 2026, with the balance coming from other sources. Scott, I don't know whether there's more detail you would want to draw attention to in answering that question.
No, there isn't, Paul. Now it's 2,220, so the residual is from 106 and other non-grant supporters, as you mentioned.
Okay, thank you. So, Jake, hopefully that just gives you a sense of how that splits down. So, historically, we've tended to do about a third of our programme through Section 106 and similar, and two-thirds through the Homes England programmes. And I think the split is roughly similar in the projection that you're looking at.
Thank you, Paul. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of your roadshow to type in your question. If you'd like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. And if you've joined via web, please press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We'll pause once more to allow any questions to generate. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you've joined via web, please press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. And if you'd like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Deal Roadshow.
I see Jake's...
It looks like we have a follow-up question from Jake.
Yep. So Jake has just asked how confident we feel about hitting the recently announced responsive repairs targets in consultation with the government. So this is the so-called Awad law and the confirmation that they're looking for emergencies to be dealt with within 24 hours. and the 14-day period to investigate other issues arising there. So, Jake, we already operate a 24-hour response target for emergency repairs. So we think we're geared up to deal with that. In the 2 or 3 months following the publication of the coroner's report, there was a huge spike in activity for our surveyors to come and look at instances of damp and mould. So it would have been challenging to deliver a 14-day response at that time, but that has now settled down and we are confident that we have resourced that to be able to respond within the timescales indicated. So we think we're in a good place with that, if that's the right way to put it.
Thank you, Paul. Once more, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you joined via web, please press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Duo Roadshow screen. And if you'd like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Duo Roadshow. We'll pause once more. It appears there are currently no further questions. Handing it back to Paul for any final remarks.
Thanks, Joey, and thanks everyone for tuning in and listening to our presentation this afternoon. It's great to have an opportunity just to share with you some of the things that Carbon is up to. Hopefully you've got a good sense of where we are as an organisation, that performance is holding up well. And we're particularly pleased with the direction of travel on our customer satisfaction scores. So we think we're well placed to respond favourably to the new consumer regulation regime that comes in from April. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Thank you to my co-presenters, and thank you to Joey and the team for looking after us on the call. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and hope to speak to many of you again soon. Bye.
This concludes today's Evercall. A replay will be made available shortly following today's call. Thank you and have a great day.